Welcome to Exceptional Networking, how to build heterogeneous networks for crisis communication. This is Jitter, my co-hacker, and I am Mr. Crash. I'm welcoming you to this presentation. First, it's about resilience. In my last talk at the big Congress, I already asked the question, what happens when traditional networks fail? There could be many reasons why they fail, but there's always one common denominator, which is, how do we find other people to talk with? Mostly, when we think about this problem, we have many different things people use. Walkie-talkies, amateur shortwave or longwave radio, LoRa, Wi-Fi, different things. Wouldn't it be nice if this could be combined so it works? No matter what you're using, no matter where you are. So just a few examples why this could be important. I already mentioned my last Ford thing in the Congress that during the Hong Kong protests 2019, the students developed their own mesh-based networking app in order to communicate when the Chinese government shut down the network. Also, here on the left, right side, when there's bad reception or no reception and a disaster happens, we still want to be able to communicate. Reality check. These scenarios, they're not hypothetical. They're happening right at this time, just not here. And they will happen again, maybe here. So we are going to talk about technology we developed since last Congress, and we're trying to develop with you as a community in order to be resilient in cases where communication is important but not possible with traditional networks. Just as a reminder, if you think about a bit about cell phones, you see there are cell phone towers, routers, sometimes it's just a single point of failure, or people have the option just to turn things off, which we also do not want. So phones are mostly not just enough. Our solution, which we are presenting, is how we can build heterogeneous networks using multiple communication mediums. This has the advantage if you're sitting somewhere in your headquarters and your people are in a different country and they're well organized in that country, but they then go to a different place where there's no network, it's still possible to communicate because one connection is using Ethernet, another 4G, another Wi-Fi or LoRa, whatever is currently there. And during our development of Metrum, we always thought we do not know what there will be and how people will want to use it. So we try to be as abstract as possible and be open to as many possibilities. It should also be simple to deploy by non-experts, because in the case there's a big emergency, who's gonna have radios and LoRa and everything at home? Because after the emergency, I don't think that there will be Amazon working. So, we have developed Metrum. First of all, what is Metrum? I apologize if the slides are a bit small, but on the left side here, you see our Metrum network stack, which is no matter if you have LoRa, Wi-Fi, radio, Bluetooth, 4G, 5G, or other types of internet, we have one unified communication layer. And this communication layer does the transport, it does the serialization, it does the discovery of new clients or people, and then there's more, but we'll get to that later. This compares to our typical state-of-the-art deployment where there's one team which uses maybe LoRa, another team which uses radio, and then people who use normal internet connections somewhere else in order to coordinate. In this case, every time you deploy or define a new way of working together, it's important to develop all the connections in between here. And this compares to the unified communication layer where there's just one way to do it. Later, after showing Metrum, I will get to the technicalities. But for now, The core concepts are: we want to have a decentralized telemetry and communication system with works with Reticulum. There's a good talk about this at the Congress, just search for it at media.ccc. Then we have developed a publisher-subscriber pattern for efficient data fly. We used standardized SENML for sensor measurements, as well as CBOR encoding. Currently, we just support telemetry, but we hope in a few days or weeks, we also implement more. Our SENML is currently sent over CBOR using the specific data tag. Also, because we've used Reticulum, we out of the box have end-to-end encryption for secure communication. And also, you have some advantages of Reticulum, such as that senders are always anonymous. So it's also possible to anonymously send data. This is how we designed it. So the top at the blue can be whatever you want. It's like if you, and when the internet was invented, people asked us, like, what can we do with the internet? And they said, whatever you want. And this is my same answer for the blue box. Below is what we developed in the last weeks and months, which is Metrum, what I just explained. Below that is the Reticulum network stack, which I will explain a bit more in detail later. And then here you see the different types of interfaces, which we have also here, such as Wi-Fi, which is invisible, cellular, you already have seen it. That is, for example, LoRa. Here's a packet radio, which can do either data transportation or voice-to-voice communication, as well as our internet over TCP/IP. So this is a self-organizing mesh. So wherever you add new devices, it will work. Why have we chose CBOR for encoding instead of JSON? In our test, CBOR saves up to 70% of transmission rates. We have built this to work with the least amount of data throughput possible. Saving another 60 to 70% is a very good thing. Also, it works very well in combination with JSON. And if you use things which are standardized by the IETF, such as SENML or different things, it works even better because of a more efficient representation. So we choose CBOR because it's perfect for constrained networks. This is our PubSub architecture. On the left side, we have the communication mediums. In the middle, we have our unified transport layer. The new thing here is everything has one transport layer, while before, it's very hard. This also means you can later just open a website and use it over the internet. You don't need to have any technical devices at home. If you just want to have somebody you want to write who's on this network, you can just do this. And then for our data collection, we have a publisher node, which sends out data. This could be patient data of a person in the emergency care. This could be things about the environment. Do whatever you want. And then the subscriber node, which collects this by establishing a link. And then we have different applications. There will be a very short application demo because I think you have lots of questions. But if you have any questions, also come to me after this presentation. We will be here. And we have our contact details in the slides. If you want to add a new sensor, there's a very small amount of code. I'm sorry for showing you code at all, but maybe you like it. If you have a new sensor, this is all what you need to write. There is one function you implement for one class, which is the sensor class. And whatever you collect here, in this case, we're using a library for SENML, so we can just use the enums to put the correct values inside. Using standardized things for serialization is very good, because this allows us to automatically create dashboards and more because the semantics are already correct. We have different scenarios for using Metrum. One, of course, is off-grid, or as I call it, in my own city, wherever or outside of the city where O2 has no connection. This could be environmental sensors, patient data reporting, air quality and pollution tracking. We have also some devices with air, which are you're doing this, but they're back there. For disaster responses, this is also interesting. For example, as I showed before with the use case, right now it's very hard to coordinate a team from a different place where there's no connection, which is always the same connection going through. And by having a diverse set of mediums and interfaces, this is possible. Also, when there's no network, this is very good. Here's our, this is how we think it could be done. I'm sorry again, I think it's quite hard to read. I can barely read it from here. The slides will be also uploaded to Pretax, so you see it more in detail. So at the top, we have our disaster zone, which on the one side has affected population. In this case, if the affected population wants to communicate with anybody, they can just come to one of our ad hoc Wi-Fi hotspots and they will be connected with all of the network. Then there are the first responders. The first responders also have LoRa, for example, or packet radio, and they can talk to the local community or organizers, and everybody is also connected outside of the zone. As you see at the bottom, our Metrum protocol connects everything. So this is the big advantage. If you remember one thing from this talk is, it's not, are you using LoRa, or are you using hand radio, or are you doing it encrypted? You can just find one unified protocol and then communicate with everybody. And the reason why I'm stressing this is there is no open source solution for this, which I have not heard about in the last 1 year. Of course, we're using Reticulum. I will also later show a few other things, such as Mistastic or MeshChat, and I will then say why this is not the right thing for the case we are presenting. If you want to take a picture of the slides, now is the right moment. Here we have our documentation as well as the CodePack repository. We are open for pull requests or issues. Also, we are here. So if you want to collaborate, talk to us or ask questions however you want. So, future developments which we plan for Metrum. I would like to support CRDTs. The one advantage this would have is that we can have specific text files somewhere and they will be always correct, like CRDTs allow this. Also, I want to implement Metrum as a pluggable interface for co-op, which is like REST, but made for constrained environments. What does CRDT mean? CRDTs, I don't remember what the acronym means. You asked that question too early. But in the end, it's like a conflict, redundancy-free, data type something. So in the end, it means if you're using a CRDT and you edit a text and you have no internet and somebody else edits a text, in the end, the text will be correct. We know this mostly like from pads or Google Docs. So it's the opposite of Git, where there will be merge conflicts. Then Riot OS has been also developed here in the TH Hamburg and at my university in Bremen. Would be nice to have Metrum working there, but that's very far away. Also, we would like to have more efficient multicast delivery in the future and implement more sensors which directly work out of the box. So, network stacks. Now we're getting into the technical part. On the left side is our traditional OSI level, a model. From the bottom, we have the physical layer, then the data link layer, our network layer, the transport layer, session, presentation, and application. TCP is almost the same. While Reticulum on the right side, you see there's one big secure extensible application layer. This means the transport, the application, and the network is all handled by Reticulum. This is why we were able to use this as a unified interface. Also, there's less headers compared to TCP IP. So the packets will be even smaller we send over the radio. This is also important because the reticulum has been made to work with speeds just until 5 bits per second, so very slow. And it will still work. As I already mentioned before, we have different interfaces, TCP, UDP, LoRa, packet radio, and thanks to Mr. Jitter, also ESPNow. So if you have ESPNow devices at home, you can already connect them into Reticulum. The way this works is, do not explain it very complicated. We use HDLC, or Reticulum uses HDLC, which is a technology from the 70s, which does high-level data link control, as well as framing. There are excellent docs which explain this better. So let's go to the next slide. So, what are some of the advantages and disadvantages of Reticulum? Or why haven't you most likely not heard of it yet? The advantages are very nice. If I use this, I immediately have end-to-end encrypted networks. There's also no central point of failure, since it's a decentralized mesh. It's self-healing and self-organizing. So if one node disappears, the network will still work. It's open source and community-driven. There are some disadvantages. The open source community and the group of developers is much smaller than with Meshtastic. There's also no formal specification. And since we are not yet at a 1.0 version, there can be changes any moment. It's also not very stable, not the software, but the API. There are roughly 4 competing graphical user interfaces, and none of them are feature complete. So if you like web dev or writing applications, you will be a big help. Also, I forgot to mention, Meshtastic runs autonomously on a very small device. This requires 2 devices, but at some point, not. People are working on rewriting everything in C++ and Rust. So let's talk about a bit the speeds we can achieve. Since this is one medium, the speed depends on what you're using, as well as the latency. LoRa can get really far. In my talk at the Congress, I showed if we would put LoRa on the top of the television tower, you could almost reach the ocean. But it's very slow and has a big latency. Then we have packet radio, which has a much better latency, but is even slower. Then we have TCP or UDP, very fast and very quick. And I2P, which allows people to anonymously access the Reticulum network in case they don't want any traces of them connecting with this network. So these are the cryptographic things which occur when you're using Reticulum. They're very fancy, they're well thought out. Comparing this to Meshtastic, this is much better. And there are some things, or this is one of the main reasons why I also like Reticulum. Because if I write an application or a transport protocol above Reticulum, I have abstracted encryption and packet security. There are different types of destinations. Single, which is encrypted with a public key and supports multi-hops. Plain, which is used for broadcasts and is not encrypted. Groups, which has not been completely implemented, so we cannot use that yet. And links. Links are a special channel to a single destination, which has some very nice features, which is the reason why we're also using it in our demonstrator. The way this now works, if We open Reticulum. At first, nobody will be there. There's no map, there's no phone book, like here with the DECT. What you need to do is send an announcement. This will be broadcasted to everybody, and it contains your public key. So if anybody wants to send you something back, they now can encrypt messages to you. Announces propagate through all of the network. Due to this, it's mostly also very easy to reverse the package direction. If you use Reticulum, you will have an identity. This is not a personal identity which you can only use once. It's your public key encryption pair. This can be a person, a machine, a sensor, and you need to make sure to store your private keys securely. If we now establish a link between two devices, they exchange their key pair, nodes are forward, and we store the link ID in our table so we know how to get this link working again. Links are bidirectional. The source of a request always stays anonymous, and we know if a packet got received. This all may sound very abstract. I know. We're living in 2025, and the internet has been here very long. But the reason why I'm explaining why links are important is we are trying to remove complexity and able to allow us to build networks for emergencies. In this case, complexity is bad because it requires complicated technology. And I have now explained how links work, because this is everything you need to know about Reticulum and the networking. Links are also very cheap in terms of bandwidth. They use about half a bit per second. Also, in Reticulum, there are transport nodes. If you have a transport node, it will just forward all the connections further. If you want to install Reticulum on one of your Meshtastic devices, you can join our testnet here, because we have a transport node running directly in this box. It's working because we have a small battery inside. So, now we come to the comparison between the different off-grid communication systems which are currently being used, or you find many things about. So first, Reticulum, Meshtastic, and Meshcore. How does Meshtastic compare with Reticulum? Well, Meshtastic uses flood routing. This means whenever you send a packet, it's going to be sent to everyone, and everyone is going to send it again to everyone. So you have exponential amounts of network packets just for one network. So you are not able to build big networks with Reticulum. Also, they decided to do routing over MQTT, which is another strange idea. There's only two interfaces. One is LoRa, and the other one is routing over MQTT. Then there's Meshcore, which has been released in the last few months. It has a nice app. It does good things with encryption. It supports multi-hop packet forwarding, which does not have exponential numbers of packets, but it only uses LoRa. And if you only use LoRa, you exclude everybody else. So this is why, in my or in our opinion, Reticulum is the best we currently have. It's not perfect. And it has about or more than 15 different interfaces you can use. This is the nicest web interface if you want to use Reticulum. You have your messages, but not only messages. Now comes more advantages compared to Meshtastic. You can send files, you can send audio, and you can call people. And calling works over LoRa. Then you have NomadNet. I will show it to you later. And some different settings. So if you open the website, you can flash new devices, you can change your interface settings, you can browse the node network. Also, you can visualize the network. You see how good the quality is, and since there's no identifiable sources, you cannot do traces. You just know these are all the nodes which I can talk to right now. There's also an internet browser. I know, it looks a bit old, but this is a new thing which also the developer Mark of Reticulum invented for his network stack. It's not Markdown, it's MU. Similar, it has all the same features, but you have terminal escape codes. So if you like doing things in the terminal, the MU files are excellent because people build forums, websites, image boards, whatever. You can already find it in here. There's also a phone app inside of. If you know my number or my destination ID, you can just paste it in and you can call me. No matter if you're using LoRa, if you're using Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, ESPNow, it works out of the box. Because, again, the interfaces below are abstracted. If you want to download MeshChat, take a picture of the QR code. If you want to reach us, here are our DECT numbers. I'm sorry, but DECT is not working yet until now, so you will be able to call us tomorrow or find us. We are on that side to the right and to the left, directly into that hall. And if you have questions about Metrum, ask us. We're here. We're happy to help. Now we come to the suitcase. This suitcase contains many small devices. One of this device only costs about 30 euros, and it can do LoRa. That device is responsible. Well, let me just jump through here. This is our power device. You can connect it with solar panels. It has a lithium iron poly 4 battery. You have many different outputs, 12 volt board bus, and it can be used to power our other suitcases. Ah, yes, I forgot to say what C4 means. It's the Chaos Communication Command and Control Center. Inside the next case, we have the LoRa, we have an ESP, we have an interface for packet radio, we have the Wi-Fi access point, we have battery and solar connections, everything is waterproof, and there are status displays and controls. There's an HDMI out, many things you would need. We also developed this exactly for the case that we do not know what you are going to be doing with it. So it should just work, and it should work anywhere, and then no matter what use case you have. And if it does not, please tell us about it. We will try to fix it. Here's a nice LoRa antenna. Let's see. This is the device, the suitcase to which the antenna is connected. There's a Raspberry Pi inside of it, it's running Ambien. Again, there are batteries inside, and much more. GPS receiver. Again, come to us, talk to us, tell us, ask us what you want or tell us what you need, and we're happy to help and work and hack together with you. Here's another list of what's inside. Since we're almost over our time, I'm going to be very fast. This is how the deployment looks at Easterhag. That's our table, and it's already running. After the presentation, we're going to build it up again, and it should be possible to connect with it. Yes, this is what I meant with exceptional network. Everything's here. Try to join us, ask us questions, come to us, and talk to us. Again, if you missed the first QR code of our repository, now's another time to take a picture. And also, thank you to our sponsor. Jitter works at Data Drivers from the Synvert Group, and his employers are looking for people to work with them. They're very kind. He was allowed to book a few work days to work also on this. And it's a nice place where people who are in the chaos environment are also supported. I see we have about 6 minutes left, so please ask me any questions.
You mentioned packet radio and encryption, and in ham radio, encryption is illegal.
Depends on where you are.
Everywhere, I think. At least in Germany.
That's a question for Jitter.
Now the question, because it's a mesh network, can some nodes be configured in such a way that they can pass a non-encrypted message but will refuse to pass encrypted message?
You could implement that.
Okay.
You established that the sending node is anonymous when sending a message. So how do you deal with an adversary flooding the network with different identities and just sending messages because you can't really filter out the messages from one specific attacker because you don't know the attacker?
Well, that would be a bad case. You could do different things, but it's a bit complicated. The important thing is they only cause linear damage. While other networks, this will be exponential. But it's an unsolved problem. So if you want to talk about that with me later, we can see if there's a way this can be improved.
So you've said, again, that the sender of a link is anonymous. So if somebody wants to establish a connection with you, first you do not know who that person is. How can you make sure that this person in the end is still the person, somebody that you actually know? So for example, somebody calls you, you don't know that person, or messages you maybe is better, and then they say, hey, I'm your friend Jitter, please send me 500 euros from your bank account. So how do you verify then, okay, that this is actually Jitter?
If you're using links, at one point you know the identity, but not the destination ID. And at this point, you know their public key. And so if somebody tries to, or if somebody has a the correct private key to decrypt your messages, then it's them. And if not, they have lost their keys. And this is out of scope.
Okay, so you say the public key is a fixed identity to a person and you don't have any provisions regarding exchanging these keys at a later point.
I think so.
Okay.
We can talk about that later.
Thank you. So I have a question. Your transportation layer has layers have very different transport speeds. For example, TCP/IP has, I don't know, 100 gigabits, but LoRa has maybe like 1 to 200 kilobits. So how can you ensure that it is not bottlenecked by those slow transportation layers to keep it stable? For example, if you send out a large file, I don't know, with 100 gigabytes, then LoRa will be occupied for some days and the TCP/IP maybe for some minutes or seconds.
If it's possible, the fast medium will be chosen. If it's really important that you send this file, then you will occupy the network.
So it is out of service then for a couple of days.
I would need to check how the priorities work.
Thank you.
So I think we have like 1 or half a minute left. If anybody still has a question, please ask it now.
Thank you for your presentation. I just want to ask how much power drawn there is with your setup for 10 people or so, or 10 community heroes?
Test out. Thank you very much. Power consumption is currently a question I cannot exactly answer. It's the Raspberry Pi and additional stuff. So for me, next is to work on the metrics. So of course, we need to know how much power we get into the system from the solar panel. We need to know how much has been stored before and how much we're actually draining. Yes, we will do that just with the same telemetry as Mr. Crash showed today, because this will also allow all devices being somehow related to the mission be able to have centralized monitoring. Of course, we need to know when the battery is going to be depleted. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. Any more questions?
Otherwise, we're already over our time by half a minute.
I think we have time till 1:45 because you started late, so they gave you some more
time. Sure, go ahead.
Okay, if anybody's particularly interested in working on the power supply system, like getting the sensors done, like figure how the voltage is, how the current is, going in, going out. Also thermal monitoring of the batteries and stuff. I'd also like to interconnect the BMS so we get info from the BMS like I'm going to burn or something like this. So it's also a bit safety related. We don't want to have like rescue missions ending up in fire. That'd be an additional hazard. So I think we are really looking for contributors on a wide range of topics. So if that is somehow scratching you, getting you interested, please keep in touch with us. Thank you very much.